sent to know how the other meetings in the city were. I found that at some of the meeting places, friends had been kept out. At others, they had been taken, but these were set at liberty again a few days after. A glorious time it was, for the Lord's power came over all, and his everlasting truth got renown. For in the meetings, as fast as some that were speaking were taken down, others were moved of the Lord to stand up and speak, to the admiration of the people, and the more because many Baptists and other secretaries left their public meetings and came to see how the Quakers would stand. As for the informer aforesaid, he was so frightened that hardly any informer dared to appear publicly in London for some time after. But the mayor, whose name was Samuel Starling, though he carried himself smoothly towards us, proved afterwards a very great persecutor of our friends, many of whom he cast into prison, as may be seen in the trials of William Penn, William Mead, and others at the Old Bailey this year. Footnote 193. This trial at the Old Bailey is reported in full in the preface to the works of William Penn. It is one of the most interesting episodes in his life, and from a legal point of view, it is one of the most important jury trials of that century. William Penn had thrown in his lot with the Quakers, definitely, in 1666, though he had been influenced by the preaching of Thomas Lowe while he was a student in Oxford University in 1650. As I was walking down a hill, a great weight and oppression fell upon my spirit. Footnote 194, near Rochester. I got on my horse again, but the weight remained so that I was hardly able to ride. At length we came to Rochester, but I was much spent, being so extremely laden and burdened with the world's spirits that my life was oppressed under them. I got with difficulty to Gravesend and lay at an inn there, but could hardly either eat or sleep. The next day, John Rouse and Alexander Parker went to London, and John Stubbs, being come to me, we went over the ferry into Essex. We came to Hornchurch, where there was a meeting on first day. After it, I rode with great uneasiness to Stratford to a friend's house whose name was Williams, and who had formerly been a captain. Here I lay exceedingly weak, and at last lost both hearing and sight. Several friends came to me from London, and I told them that I should be assigned to such as would not see, and such as would not hear the truth. Footnote 195. This is another of the times in Fox's life when he underwent serious physical changes as a result of psychical disturbance. In this condition I continued some time. Several came about me, and though I could not see their persons, I felt and discerned their spirits, who were honest-hearted and who were not. Diverse friends who practiced physic came to see me and would have given me medicines, but I was not to meddle with any, for I was sensible I had a travail to go through, and therefore desired none but solid, weighty friends might be about me. Under great sufferings and travails, sorrows and oppressions, I lay for several weeks, whereby I was brought so low and weak in body that few thought I could live. Some that were with me went away, saying they would not see me die. And it was reported both in London and in the country that I was deceased, but I felt the Lord's power inwardly supporting me. When they that were about me had given me up to die, I spoke to them to get a coach to carry me to Gerard Roberts, about 12 miles off, for I found it was my place to go thither. I had now recovered a little glimmering of sight, so that I could discern the people and fields as I went, and that was all. When I came to Gerard's, he was very weak, and I was moved to speak to him and encourage him. After I stayed about 3 weeks there, it was with me to go to Enfield. Friends were afraid of my removing, but I told them I might safely go. When I had taken my leave of Gerard and was come to Enfield, I went first to visit a Moore Stoddart, who lay very weak and almost speechless. I was moved to tell him that he had been faithful as a man and faithful to God, and that the immortal seed of life was his crown. Many more words I was moved to speak to him, though I was then so weak I was hardly able to stand, and within a few days after, a Moore died. I went to the Widow Dry's at Enfield, where I lay all that winter, warring in spirit with the evil spirits of the world that warred against truth and friends, for there were great persecutions at this time. Some meeting houses were pulled down, and many were broken up by soldiers. Sometimes a troop of horse or a company of foot came, and some broke their swords, carbines, muskets, and pikes with beating friends, and many they wounded, so that their blood lay in the streets. Amongst others that were active in this cruel persecution at London, my old adversary, Colonel Kirby, was one. With a company of foot, he went to break up several meetings, and he would often inquire for me at the meetings he broke up. One time, as he went over the water to Horsley Down, there happening some scuffle between some of his soldiers and some of the watermen, he bade his men fire at them. They did so, and killed some. I was under great sufferings at this time, beyond what I have words to declare, for I was brought into the deep, and saw all the religions of the world, and people that lived in them, and I saw the priests that held them up, who were as a company of men-eaters, eating up the people like bread, and gnawing the flesh from off their bones. But as for true religion, and worship, and ministers of God, alack, I saw there was none amongst those of the world that pretended to it. Though it was a cruel, bloody, persecuting time, yet the Lord's power went over all. His everlasting seed prevailed, and friends were made to stand firm and faithful in the Lord's power. Some sober people of other professions would say, if friends did not stand, the nation would run into debauchery. Though by reason of my weakness I could not travel amongst friends as I had been used to do, yet in the motion of life I sent the following lines as an encouraging testimony to them. My dear friends, the seed is above all. In it walk, in which ye all have life. Be not amazed at the weather, for always the just suffered by the unjust, but the just had the dominion. All along ye may see, by faith the mountains were subdued, and the rage of the wicked with his fiery darts was quenched. Though the waves and storms be high, yet your faith will keep you, so as to swim above them, for they are but for a time, and the truth is without time. Therefore keep on the mountain of holiness, ye who are led to it by the light. Do not think that anything will outlast the truth, for the truth standeth sure, and is over that which is out of the truth. For the good will overcome the evil, the light darkness, the life death, virtue, vice, and righteousness, unrighteousness. The false prophet cannot overcome the true, but the true prophet, Christ, will overcome all the false. So be faithful and live in that which doth not think the time long. Signed, G.F. After some time it pleased the Lord to allay the heat of this violent persecution, and I felt in spirit an overcoming of the spirits of those men-eaters that had stirred it up and carried it on to that height of cruelty. I was outwardly very weak, and I plainly felt, and those friends that were with me, and that came to visit me, took notice, that as the persecution ceased, I came from under the travails and sufferings that had lain with such weight upon me. So that towards the spring I began to recover and to walk up and down, beyond the expectation of many who did not think I could ever have gone abroad again. Whilst I was under this spiritual suffering, the state of the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven, was open to me, which some carnal-minded people had looked upon to be like an outward city dropped out of the elements. I saw the beauty and glory of it, the length, the breadth, and the height thereof, all in complete proportion. I saw that all who are within the light of Christ and in his faith, of which he is the author, and in the Spirit, the Holy Ghost, which Christ and the holy prophets and apostles were in, and within the grace, the truth, and power of God, which are the walls of the city. I saw that such are within the city, are members of it, and have right to eat of the tree of life, which yields her fruit every month, and whose leaves are for the healing of the nations. Many things more did I see concerning the heavenly city, the New Jerusalem, which are hard to be uttered, and would be hard to be received. But in short, this holy city is within the light, and all that are within the light are within the city. The gates whereof stand open all the day, for there is no night there, that all may come in. The next page is a map showing the settlements in America visited by George Fox. Chapter 18, 2 years in America, 1671-1673. When I received notice of my wife's being taken to prison again, I sent two of her daughters to the king, and they procured his order to the sheriff of Lancashire for her discharge. Footnote 196. This was in 1669, about 3 months after their marriage. The sentence of praemunire was passed against Margaret Fell in 1663, so that for about 10 years, she was the binge's prisoner, and her estate was in jeopardy. But though I expected she would have been set at liberty, yet this violent storm of persecution coming suddenly on, the persecutors there found means to hold her still in prison. But now the persecution a little ceasing, I was moved to speak to Martha Fisher and another woman friend to go to the king about her liberty. They went in the faith and in the Lord's power, and he gave them favor with the king, so that he granted a discharge under the broad seal to clear both her and her estate, after she had been 10 years a prisoner and premanured, the like whereof was scarce to be heard in England. I sent down the discharge forthwith by a friend, by whom also I wrote to her, to inform her how to get it delivered to the justices, and also to acquaint her that it was upon me from the Lord to go beyond sea, to visit the plantations in America, and therefore I desired her to hasten to London as soon as she could conveniently, after she had obtained her liberty, because the ship was then fitting for the voyage. In the meantime, I got to Kingston and stayed at John Rouse's till my wife came up, and then I began to prepare for the voyage. But the yearly meeting being near at hand, I tarried till it was over. Footnote 197. He speaks of the yearly meeting as though it were a well-established institution. Norman Penny has sent me an interesting extract from Barclay's Letters of the Early Friends, which traces the development of the yearly meeting. There was a yearly meeting settled at Skipton in Yorkshire for all the northern and southern countries, and then the yearly meeting was removed to John Crooks, and afterwards the yearly meeting was kept at Bailey in Yorkshire, and likewise at Skipton in the year 1660, and from thence it was moved to London the next year, where it hath been kept ever since. Page 312 from a document said to have been by George Fox, but only since 1672 has it been held in London without intermission. The series of yearly meeting minutes commences the 23rd of the third month, 1671. Many friends came up to it from all parts of the nation, and a very large and precious meeting it was, for the Lord's power was over all, and his glorious, everlasting, renowned seat of life was exalted above all. After this meeting was over and I had finished my services for the Lord in England, the ship and the friends that intended to go with me being ready, I went to Gravesend on the 12th of the sixth month, my wife and several friends accompanying me to the Downs, footnote 198, which would be August by the unreformed calendar. We went from Wapping in a barge to the ship, which lay a little below Gravesend, and there we found the friends that were bound for the voyage with me, who had gone down to the ship the night before. Their names were Thomas Briggs, William Edmondson, John Rouse, John Stubbs, Solomon Eccles, James Lancaster, John Cartwright, Robert Witters, George Pattison, John Hull, Elizabeth Hooton, and Elizabeth Myers. The vessel was a yacht called the Industry, the captain's name Thomas Forster, and the number of passengers about 50. I lay that night on board, but most of the friends at Gravesend. Early next morning the passengers and those friends that intended to accompany us to the Downs being come on board, we took our leave in great tenderness of those that came with us to Gravesend only, and set sail about 6 in the morning for the Downs. Having a fair wind, we outsailed all the ships that were outward bound and got thither by evening. Some of us went ashore that night and lodged at Deal, where we understood an officer had orders from the governor to take our names in writing, which he did next morning. but we told him they had been taken at Gravesend. In the afternoon, the wind serving, I took leave of my wife and other friends and went on board. Before we could sail, there being two of the king's frigates riding in the Downs, the captain of one of them sent his pressmaster on board us, who took three of our seamen. This would certainly have delayed, if not wholly prevented, our voyage, had not the captain of the other frigate, being informed of the leakiness of our vessel and the length of our voyage, in compassion and much civility, spared us two of his own men. Before this was over, a custom house officer came on board to produce packets and get fees, so that we were kept from sailing till about sunset, during which delay a very considerable number of merchantmen outward bound were several leagues before us. Being clear, we set sail in the evening, and next morning overtook part of that fleet about the height of Dover. We soon reached the rest, and in a little time left them all behind, for our yacht was counted a very swift sailer. But she was very leaky, so that the seamen and some of the passengers did, for the most part, pump day and night. One day they observed that in 2 hours' time she sucked in 16 inches of water in the well. When we had been about 3 weeks at sea, one afternoon we spied a vessel about 4 leagues astern of us. Our master said it was a Sally, S-A-L-L-E-E, man of war, that seemed to give us chase. Footnote 199. A Moorish pirate ship, named from Sally, a seaport of Morocco. This incident not only indicates Fox's simple faith in God, but it also is a good illustration of the way in which he inspired confidence in others. The captain believes in him. He said, "Come on, let us go to supper, and when it grows dark, we shall lose him." This he spoke to please and pacify the passengers, some of whom began to be very apprehensive of the danger. But friends were well satisfied in themselves, having faith in God and no fear upon their spirits. When the sun was gone down, I saw out of my cabin the ship making towards us. When it grew dark, we altered our course to miss her, but she altered also and gained upon us. At night, the master and others came into my cabin and asked me what they should do. I told them I was no mariner, and I asked them what they thought was best to do. They said there were but 2 ways, either to outrun him or to tack about and hold the same course we were going before. I told them that he were a thief, they might be sure he would tack about too. And as for outrunning him, it was to no purpose to talk of that, for they saw he sailed faster than we. They asked me again what they should do, for, they said, if the mariners had taken Paul's counsel, they had not come to the damage they did. I answered that it was a trial of faith, and therefore the Lord was to be waited on for counsel. So retiring in spirit, the Lord showed me that his life and power were placed between us and the ship that pursued us. I told this to the master and the rest, and that the best way was to tack about and steer our right course. I desired them also to put out all their candles but the one they steered by, and to speak to all the passengers to be still and quiet. About 11 at night, the watch called and said they were just upon us. This disquieted some of the passengers. I sat up in my cabin, and looking through the porthole, the moon being not quite down, I saw them very near us. I was getting up to go out of the cabin, but remembering the word of the Lord, that his life and power were placed between us and them, I lay down again. The master and some of the seamen came again and asked me if they might not steer such a point. I told them they might do as they would. By this time the moon was quite down. A fresh gale arose, and the Lord hid us from them. We sailed briskly on and saw them no more. The next day, being the first day of the week, we had a public meeting in the ship, as we usually had on that day throughout the voyage.